Hello and welcome to the Breakthrough Coaches Podcast Coaching Series sample session entitled An Introduction to Coaching. Today's session is designed to take this new technology for a test run, to make sure your MP3 player can accept our podcasts, and to set you up to get the most out of your monthly subscription. I'm Jill Pancoast, Vice President and Managing Partner of The Breakthrough Coach. If you're listening to this session, you're a graduate of our two-day program, How to Work Less, Produce More, and Still Get the Job Done in a Sensible School Week. The purpose of this audio series is to support our alumni in the on-the-job implementation of the two-day program. As with any new program you undertake, challenges will arise. You'll have burning questions for which you'll want answers. You'll come to decision-making crossroads that call for out-of-the-box solutions. And inevitably, breakdowns will happen. This podcast series is designed to support and encourage you in those make-or-break moments so that you thrive as an administrative team. Unlike Malachi, I've not had the pleasure of meeting all of you in person, but I have had the opportunity to speak with many of you by phone and email, and I'd just like to say thank you for your kind words and referrals on our behalf. Your endorsements of our work affirm your commitment to the long-term health and staying power of your profession, and they are always appreciated. As TB's Vice President, I manage our back office operations and programs. I coordinate with our partner agencies and clients to produce the two-day program throughout the United States and abroad, and I am accountable for the design and delivery of our ongoing coaching programs. But most importantly, as with your administrative team, I tell Malachi what to do, where to go, and when to be there, and that arrangement works well for us. I hope it is working as well for both of you. The Breakthrough Coach is a management consulting firm that works strictly in education with instructional leaders. TBC is committed to producing a breakthrough in the results of public schools by transforming the roles of the public school principal and secretary. The purpose of our work is to introduce you to a management philosophy and set of practices designed to free the school principal from the technical, bureaucratic duties involved in running the front office and enable you instead to spend at least 25% of your time out in classrooms developing your teachers. Secretaries, our goal for you to eliminate the piles of paper on, under, and around your desk, to reduce your number of daily interruptions, and to eliminate the need for you to put in any unnecessary overtime either at night or over weekends. TBC's management methodology has a track record of reducing most administrators' workloads by about 15 to 20 hours per week, increasing their time in classrooms by 500% or more, and then increasing student achievement in 2 years' time or less. In this first session, I'm going to set you up to get the most out of your monthly podcasts by talking about what it means to be in a coaching relationship. During the two-day program, Malachi introduced you to the domain in which coaches work, what he called areas of blindness. Today, I'm going to talk about how coaching works so that you have a sense of how best to use the information presented in this series. I'm going to back into this idea of being in a coaching relationship by distinguishing the three most common forms of learning. They are education, training, and coaching. Let's start with point number one, education. Education is typically a lengthy process in which a learner studies, according to a curriculum, the fundamental principles of a particular subject. When a student is educated, they build an understanding of how certain phenomena in the world work, such that the way they see the world in their area of study is permanently altered. As a student matures in a subject area, they are then often able to take their fundamental understanding and invent new practice in their field of study, new practice that can be applied to solve new problems. For example, when a medical student first enters medical school, there are certain prerequisite courses they must all take before anyone ever lets them near a live human being, including calculus, physics, chemistry, psychology. The list goes on. Medical school is a huge educational undertaking. It takes at least 4 years to complete and hundreds of thousands of dollars. But what does chemistry have to do with cutting open a live human being? There's nothing seemingly practical about chemistry to a surgeon. Yet any doctor worth their salt will tell you chemistry absolutely builds a background for understanding how the human body works. And it is their understanding of chemistry that allows doctors to invent new methods of treatment inside their specific disciplines. This is what education allows for. It gives the student a fundamental understanding of how the world works, such that the student can eventually design and invent new practice inside of the discipline in which they are educated. This is why many of you are currently redesigning your district-wide curricula, so that you can educate students who are able to design and invent new practice for the 21st century. We have intentionally designed the two-day program to educate you about how human beings fundamentally work and communicate together. When Malachi first introduced the distinctions manager and technician, he was educating you in two fundamental principles of organizational development. When he explained the differences between requests and promises, he was educating you in the field of human linguistics. The point of all this vocabulary was to shift how you see your job so that you could then invent new practices at work that better complemented your new worldview. Now, I want to contrast education with point number two, training. Training is an entirely different entity. In fact, training is more like bypassing education altogether. Training evolved as a teaching method during the Industrial Revolution. It was invented to bring huge numbers of laborers up to speed in a mass manufacturing environment. Laborers didn't have time to get educated. They needed to acquire practical, on-the-job skills quickly so that they could go to work to feed their families. In training, laborers learned to mimic steps, procedures, and routines in order to perform on a production line. Most 19th century laborers weren't inventing anything. They were learning to operate like machines where machines weren't capable of operating yet. Trainees perform most effectively when conditions remain consistent with their training, but they often don't know why they're doing what they're doing or why what they're doing is effective, and they are typically ineffective at solving breakdowns that violate the routine. So, for example, emergency medical technicians, they get medical training. This means they learn just enough standard medical procedure to get you to a hospital alive, so long as your condition doesn't change too rapidly. Once you arrive at the hospital, though, your chances of long-term survival greatly improve if you get with a doctor who's been educated in the fields of medical diagnosis and treatment. What we witness a lot in the field of education is short-term professional development training, which current research now shows is not all that effective for producing permanent long-term change. And although our alumni sometimes refer to the two-day program as the Breakthrough Coach Training, when you define training as we do, you quickly realize we really don't do much training in that two-day program. That's because we know that building mastery in an area requires a certain level of education combined with a rigorous commitment to coaching and practice. Coaching and practice are the teaching disciplines we primarily focus on in our curriculum. So let's revisit this notion of coaching, point number three, by revisiting the med student example again. When medical students graduate from med school, they take the board exams, and if they pass, they are then certified as minimally competent to practice medicine. Once certified as minimally competent, they still can't practice solo until they've completed both their medical internship and residency. During internship and residency, newly certified doctors practice under the careful watch of experienced doctors. This is when the newly certified doctor moves into what I'll call a coaching relationship. Coaching occurs when a skilled observer watches another practitioner perform in the moment. This in-the-moment observation allows the coach to give the new practitioner immediate feedback so that the practitioner can then adjust their action accordingly. And if the coaching is good, then the practitioner's performance, with time, should improve. Malachi did some coaching with y'all in the two-day program as individual participants stood up and asked their questions. When he was able to elicit the specific circumstances of each question, he would then offer his coaching, which I know, having spoken to many of you, you went back and tried and it worked. That's how you know the coaching is good, when you implement the coach's suggestions and something positive actually happens in your environment. Point number four, an effective coaching relationship requires certain conditions be present. Condition number one, coaches work with the already successful, or what I call the already educated and competent. You can't coach someone who has no basic competency to begin with. People at this early stage require education and training to get going. So, for example, my daughter, she's 5 and a half. She's currently taking tennis lessons. At this developmental stage, the tennis instructor is not coaching her. He is training her in how to stand correctly, look at the ball, and swing the racket. That's all you can do with a 5 and a half-year-old who doesn't have physics and human anatomy in their background, nor the physical development yet to do anything else. So for now, she gets tennis training. Tennis coaching will come later on as she matures and gains some basic understanding and competencies in these other areas. Coaching is reserved for the already competent who want to take their game to the next level. Condition number two. Coaching always takes two, an observer and a performer. A performer, no matter how good, can't coach himself while in action. Tiger Woods, as masterful a golfer as he is, can't step up to the tee, swing the club, and have any objective view of himself swinging the club. Tiger's coach is watching him swing the club, and when he sees something inconsistent, he points it out. Condition number three. Coaching requires a structure for practice, and in a coaching relationship, it's the coach's job to establish this structure. Most performers won't show up to practice unless a coach designates the time, location, and routine. In other words, unless the coach says how the practice is going to go. In this podcast series, this is our job, and with each session, we will outline for you specifically how we want you to practice what we are suggesting. And finally, condition number four, being in a coaching relationship requires that the performer practice what the coach prescribes. The performer must take their body through the motions again and again and again. Repetitive motion trains the nervous system to turn random action into actual competency. If you want to become a successful surgeon, you must practice surgery over and over and over. Just because you've read Grey's Anatomy doesn't mean you know how to do surgery. This is also why practice, no matter what the skill, looks and feels very messy. Rewiring the central nervous system is not easy. It requires time, patience, persistence, stamina, and practice. Again, medical internship and residency lasts 4 years. The specialty fellowship that follows, another 2 years. It's going to take you a minimum of 1 year to fully implement our management methodology and another 3 years to master it. Building new habits requires a long-term commitment to coaching and practice. So, if you're committed to being in a coaching relationship with us to master the 40-hour workweek and get into those classrooms, here's how we recommend you use these podcasts. Number one, download your session each month as soon as we let you know it's available. Don't wait around for a convenient time. There won't ever be a convenient time. That's why you're in this coaching relationship. The podcast series is not designed to be one more thing on your plate. If you're doing it right, this program becomes the plate so that every decision you make about how and what you spend your time on is made inside of the context of this program. Number two, listen to each podcast at least once a day throughout the month. Listen during your daily commute, while you exercise, while you're cooking and cleaning up. Listen to it whenever you have a moment to turn on and tune in. Share the session with your secretary and encourage her to listen frequently as well. The more the two of you immerse yourself in this conversation, the faster you will couple to it and the faster you will embody the work. Number three, stay open to the coaching. You need to be real vigilant with yourself here. Chances are the majority of folks around you have not been through the two-day. They don't understand what this work is or what you're trying to accomplish. They may go negative on you in response to your new look and feel, and in times like these, you're the most vulnerable to falling back into old patterns. That's why I can't stress enough, watch yourself carefully as you move through this process and stay open. Breathe. Be mindful and notice if you're allowing the opinions of others to discourage or distract you. This process requires that you maintain a mood of willingness in order to succeed with it. Otherwise, you'll just get sucked back into the herd mentality that surrounds you. Number four, you need to practice what we prescribe. Remember what Malachi said during the two-day, action is the only thing that impacts results. Listening doesn't impact results. Understanding doesn't impact results. Thinking about doesn't impact results. Only action, only intentional practice impacts the drift. You must practice the drills we prescribe. Otherwise, I can promise you nothing in your work environment is going to alter. Now, this doesn't mean you can't put your own spin on our suggestions or adapt what we're saying to your specific environment. Hey, if your spin happens to work better than our initial suggestions, by all means, go for it. But the point is this, you must run the laps around the track. No laps, no results. Again, the other thing to keep in mind, practice is a messy endeavor. Practice doesn't always look or feel good the first time out. You've got to prepare yourself mentally for this. You're a human being, not a machine. I can't press your middle suit button to make your daily meeting happen. I can't stick software in your mouth and out pops 20 requests a day. You must establish a structure for practice that supports the implementation of this work and then get to it. Initially, let go of looking or feeling good. That's not a realistic test of whether or not this is working. It's going to take you a year of regular, everyday practice with this material before it feels like your natural state. You can beat yourself up about this if you want, but it won't help. It won't make the process go any faster. The better bet? Build some stamina for this first year while being patient and compassionate with yourself. You now have a more thorough understanding of what coaching is, how to be in a coaching relationship, and how to use this podcast series as a tool for practice. We look forward to hearing more about your progress over this next year and anticipate deepening our relationship with you throughout the process. Now together, let's get started.